Hey everyone, welcome to the 32nd episode of Baseline Intelligence, the podcast designed to make you a better tennis player and a smarter athlete. I'm your host, Jonathan Stokey. Today's guest is J.Y. Abone. J.Y. was a two-time All-American at Florida State and the ACC Player of the Year. In his 3.5 years as a professional, he won 3 singles titles and 14 doubles titles. He went on to coach at the USTA Player Development and worked with Riley Opelka as his full-time travel coach from 2018 to 2021. On today's episode, we discuss how to scout your opponent, the most common reason people lose matches, and what it means to work towards being the best player you can possibly be. So sit back, relax, and prepare to become a smarter tennis player. All right, J.Y., welcome to the pod.
Thanks for having me on, man. Really honored to be here.
You know, I didn't know you as much as a player, but obviously have heard about you and seen your stuff as a coach. We'll start most recently, probably what you've gotten the most publicity for, or most known for in recent years, which is your years traveling with Riley. And he's got a unique game. But what were some of the simple things that you worked on with him in your time that you felt like led to that growth where now he's kind of a top 40 in the world player?
Well, you know, even within his uniqueness, you know, with his height and his serve, we always took the approach where if everything goes well, like what's the highest ranking you could possibly get to in your life? You know, he said, and we all agreed on it, top 5. I mean, obviously that's very high, but if a lot has to go right to get there, but we're always like, okay, yeah, we think that's possible at some point in your life. What kind of player do you need to be in order to get to that maximum potential Riley Opelka? And we looked at the things that you would need to have. So, and when we looked at it, we're like, well, here you are. Here's where you need to get to. Well, everything needs to get better. Everything. You know, so, I mean, there's nothing that's perfect in his game. And most, almost all pro players, almost nothing's perfect. Everything can be improved, right? So we just took that approach where, okay, everything needs to get better. It was a matter of when are we going to do it? You know, what's the priority? Because he is a pro player already, you know, when we started working with him. And we need to balance out him getting better as a player, but he also needs to earn a living. He needs to learn, win some matches, get sponsors, contracts, everything. There needs to be a fine balance. So we worked on everything, but just sometimes we spent more on the things that were a bigger priority relative to his game. But at some point, we worked on forehand angles, backhand angles, drop shots, slices. It was just a matter of how much did we work on it versus other parts of his game.
Did you find, as a coach who's responsible, like you said, he's got to make a living. So this isn't a junior tennis player or an adult that, you know, if they lose their 4-0 match, it's like not the end of the world. But if you go to,
it might be for some people though.
Right. Yeah, of course. It's always the biggest deal in the world to you. But, you know, did you ever feel pressure in the sense of, hey, you know, we're working on these drop shots and we're working on these angles, but what happens if he goes out there and lays an egg in his, you know, next 500 match? Did you feel that pressure? And was there ever any doubt on what you were working for?
No, I mean, there was a time, like my first year with him, where we had a pretty good start to the year, and then he lost, I think, those 6 matches in a row. So he beat Jack Sock at Del Rey, gets quarters. He was still around 200 in the world. And then from there, he loses 6 matches in a row. And I just started out with him. So I'm like, I might get fired soon. We kind of need to start winning, man. Like, I mean, of course, you know, if he keeps losing at some point, I would fire myself. Something needs to change, even if it's not me. It's more about the dynamic that works for him. And if so, yeah, at first, but then, you know, we started to kind of organize ourselves. I think one of the things that we try to do a good job of, and that's really changed how I work as a coach now, is, okay, just because we're working on all this stuff, we always made it very clear what his strategy was going into a match. So Riley, just because we've been working on angles and drop shots, you're not going to win with your angles and drop shots. We're just building it. So probably the day before a match or the 2 days before a match, it would be just play the way you're going to play. Okay. Then maybe we spend a minute just fine tuning those angles or drop shots or whatever it was that were, but we knew that it was just something to work on as opposed to something we're going to implement. And we did our best to make it very clear. And I think he did a good job of that as well, as knowing what his strengths were and just kind of sticking to that stuff.
I think the Sun Tzu art of war, whatever, it's like, know yourself, not your opponent. You'll win one, lose one. And, you know, he's the type of player that, I mean, maybe he's thinking about himself. Every coach has their own philosophy and every player has their own philosophy on how much attention they do to themselves before a match, how much attention goes on the opponent. What do you think the kind of that right balance was for you and him and your time together?
Well, I know I overdid it because I mean, I love scouting. I love watching opponents. Sometimes you have a little bit too much time on your hand, you know, because you don't practice that much the day before a match. It's more of a walkthrough. So I'm like, well, I got to fill up the day. And I'd watch a lot of matches on his opponent, make sure we had our strategy. And a lot of times, especially early in my career, you know, and this is why Jay Berger was the guy leading the team. You know, he was we'd call him the head coach for everything was, you know, I started to look a little bit too much at his opponents as opposed to what Riley needed to do himself first. And especially when you have a guy that strong, sometimes you can just overpower your opponent no matter what their strengths are. And we lost a couple of matches where, I mean, I had good intentions, but I was steering Riley towards a little bit too much on his opponent, and that hurt him. And, you know, Jay, the great coach he is, he saw that, and he's like, hey, let's really get back to what he does well and stick to that and just do that. Because if he does that very well, he can overpower whatever the other guy's strength is. So we started focusing on that, and then things actually got a lot better from there. That was a huge change. So I had to adapt to that and started to actually – whatever I saw, I had to make sure then it was very clear to him, like, you're going to start with this. This is your plan A. These are your strengths. This is what you're looking to do. You start here. If you're losing badly, if like everything's going wrong, this is your plan B and C. Plan B was still a lot more of his second and third strengths as opposed to completely on the other opponent. And then I'm like, so I always informed him of what the other guy didn't do well, but we really reassured him. We're like, Riley, if you do the things that you do well, then it doesn't matter who's on the other side of the court. So start there and then see how the match goes. And if you're not sure where to go to, then you can go to here. You know, we started to get a lot clearer with that.
Right. So a lot of juniors that I coach and even some of the adults, you know, they hopefully have developed a sense of what they do well, but they go out and they are not that great of a player where if, hey, they just do what they do, then they're going to win. You know, it's not in their hands. And so is there anything that you look for specifically as a match starts when you're looking at the opponent to find weaknesses? Is there anything that you key on there that can help you in a match?
You know, I always like to look in the warm-up. You know, I think the classic one in juniors, because they don't even pay attention to it, is when they don't even hit a single backhand in warm-up, you know, because they don't want to hit it. That automatically tells me something. If I'm looking at them in the warm-up, when they're warming up their serves, where do they spend a little bit more time to? That's usually the side they're a little bit more concerned with because they really want to get that serve going. So I try to find some of that stuff. And then also from there, it's hard because each person can have something that's slightly different. And I think that just has to be an individual thing where on the court, I think that's a skill that it's one thing to make a player aware of it, but they have to be the ones looking out for it and just develop the sense of awareness like, hey, yeah, they're not hitting any winners on me. I just lost the first set 6-1 and they haven't hit a single winner this entire match. So, hey, maybe why don't you actually pare back and take your time? But that's the one thing I've always struggled with myself as like, when do you change? How do you change? That's such a personal thing because you have to be – you might be making the right decisions and it's actually an execution thing. And you actually have to keep doing the same thing. You just maybe need a little bit more time and maybe a little bit better footwork and better targets. Don't change anything. So I've always found that to be the hardest one. When do you change? And that's a lot of internal stuff going on in match to be able to read it.
I think that's kind of like that art, you know, if someone says, oh, that player's a winner or they kind of get it done. Like that's one of those dark arts that I feel like a winner has is they have a great sense for I'm doing the right thing. It's just, I realize I missed a backhand or they hit an unrepeatable winner and I'm unbothered. And then, you know, the opposite where maybe they're at 2-all in a set, but they're like, oh my God, I'm holding on for, I'm lucky to be 2-all. Like this could easily be 0-4 and tactically I'm at a huge disadvantage. One thing I used to always look for, I don't know if you did this, but if I saw someone miss a forehand, let's say, of course they might show frustration, but is it like a cocky annoyance or is it like a scared, uh-oh, like what's wrong? And a lot of times that reaction would show me a lot about what they thought about their own strokes. So for example, I go high heavy to the backhand and they shank one and they're kind of looking at their coach and looking like weak body language. I'm like, oh, okay. That wasn't just a miss. That's a miss you've made 1,000 times in practice and you are terrified might come up again. Did you ever kind of look for that in between points?
Well, the shadow swinging. anytime I see someone shadow swinging, there's something going on there. Okay. Because if you have full confidence in whatever shot you just missed, you don't think twice. You're like, that's not going to happen again. Give it to me again. You don't worry about it. So if you're shadow swinging already, that says something. And hopefully the opponent can pay attention to that.
We talked a little bit before show about some of the things that you're kind of seeing in your junior program and life on tour, but you know, the mentality of a player is so important. Is there anything that you, any common threads between say O'Reilly and even the juniors you work with, any common mental threads that you feel like are very key for performing at your best?
Well, I found this to be across the board with everybody, which is pretty much everybody has something that they can improve technically at all levels. I mean, if you looked at the top 10 guys in the world and the top 10 women in the world, there's something technically that a lot of coaches would disagree with or try to not teach their kids. What matters more than anything is how mentally tough you can be, how you can persevere, how you can fight through things, how you compete. Can you figure your way out of matches? Can you deal with the stress and pressure and just keep going, keep going, keep going? A lot of times we spend so much time trying to be technically perfect, and we spend so many private lessons trying to find that perfect serve. I found myself saying this to a player the other day, you know, because even the parents asked me this, and, you know, another coach works with them too. They're like, well, what do you think about like that forehand miss? Like, how do you get them to focus more? And I said, what do you want me to tell someone in the middle of a point to somehow think, you know, that they weren't thinking before? They know how to hit it. The ball is there. You just have to make it. I'm sorry. Like, your technique is good enough. You're playing with energy. There's something internal. You just have to be like, I am not missing this ball. And I don't care what. I'm making this ball. I'm going to accelerate. I'm going to use my legs. And that's it. It's the end of the story. Like, and I don't care how I get it. I don't even care how I get it in. I don't care how ugly it is, but I will hit it and I will accelerate. That's what I found across all levels. You know, what's the biggest difference? It's not a technical thing. It's a mental, internal thing.
How do you develop that skill? You know, it's like you said, I know most people come to me. I haven't had one person come to me for a lesson or a training block and go, hey, we got to get my head right. We got to get everything locked down. It's usually my serve is a disaster. Can we fix that? Or, hey, I got to get here. You got to get my volleys better or whatever it is. And even though they will acknowledge, they'll listen to what you just said and go, yeah, competing and that mindset is key. That is never really the primary focus for the most part of a player. How do you get that focus on that mindset? And then how do you actually improve that mindset?
Well, I think that's the hardest part, because they want something else to be the answer, as opposed to, look, man, you just have to take a deep look inside and you just have to deal with this stress and pressure. It's not going away. You're not going to stop being nervous. What you're going to get is actually more comfortable executing under those same conditions. We all think that if we can have the perfect serve or perfect technique, we're not going to be nervous. We're going to hit that ball perfect under pressure and everything's going to be just fine. The hard part is when they come to you with that, at least my thought has always been, is because they're looking for something else to be the answer. They don't want the answer to be them, because then that's something that is, they think is, which is not, it like there's something wrong with them. I can't deal with pressure. Yeah, you can't right now, but you have to face that. It's not a conversation. Because it starts with how you handle practice. It starts with how you handle drills. It starts with how you handle everything with this champion's mentality that, you know, nothing's going to stop you. You know, a lot of times the people who are searching for other answers are the ones where the second something goes wrong, they hit the panic button because they don't have an answer. But the answer is within them. They just have to keep going and they actually have to fight harder. So, I mean, that's the first part of it, where you actually have to take a deep look inside. The second part is creating drills where literally, you know, just to give you a simple example with a young junior trying to work up and be more consistent, right? They struggle with pressure and consistency and focus. Great. Make 100 balls in a row to start your practice. And I'm not stopping until you make your 100 in a row. You can get water, but I'm not changing the drill. And I did an hour and a half private lesson just hitting the ball down the middle. They couldn't get 100 in a row. They couldn't even get past 30. But once they found out that I was serious and I wasn't going to change the drill, they had to go through the misery of, it is a boring drill. Of course, no one likes to get it. I mean, come on, let's go practice more fun things. But you have to practice your focus and your ability to stay quiet and do something that you don't want to do. And you feel that. But you have to find a way to put your emotions aside and keep going and keep going and quiet your mind while you feel that angst of, I want this to be over. I want this to be over. And learning to just put those voices aside and power through. And so by doing drills like that and having a lot of sessions where you are not moving on until you execute. And as they get better on it, you just make it more and more and more difficult. But the thing is, when we're playing matches and we're under pressure, it's really not a fun feeling. What is fun is finding a way to fight and go through all that and be victorious at the end of that. There's no greater feeling for a competitive athlete to go through all those nerves, that pressure, that stress, your knees are shaking, you feel like your legs are 1,000 pounds. You feel like you can't swing out, but you still power through and you're just breathing so hard and you still come out on top. I mean, that's why we play, because of that feeling. But you have to get through that feeling to execute. And you have to get comfortable executing under that. So I think creating more practice scenarios with that kind of stress is very important, because it's only going to be more stressful. It's not that because you get good at it in practice, you're going to be totally calm in the match because you have confidence. No. You just have confidence dealing with that stress.
You kind of touched on it. You said it, that people don't want to admit what it really is. You know, I see in matches, someone's missing backhands, or they're missing, you got to fix my forehand. And I'm like, well, I think you kind of missed the forehand because you were tight. Like, you were giving the racket a death grip. I don't really think it had anything to do with the forehand. And like you said, they think that's a problem with them. And I think that's the misconception, is they really personalize it. Like, I'm nervous. That's me. My forehand swing is something different. It's like something I do. And I think once you start viewing the mentality the same way you view a shot, hey, my forehand's above average, my serve's above average, my ability to handle pressure is below average, and you just work on it like a shot. It's not who you are. It's maybe how you compete, but that's the same way how you hit a ball. Like you said, I think labeling it is super important. And actually, there's a strength in that, right? Like, if you can face that, I think some people are so scared to say what it actually is that it just grows inside them. And then you get to the end of a match and you're scared to close. One thing, when you said that 100 ball drill, it reminded me, Frank Salazar came to our academy, and he, you know, coached a lot of great players. He coached Francis Tiafo when he was younger. And he said Francis was having a hard time closing matches. And so their big focus was just finishing drills. So if it was 100 balls, you have to finish. And they would go, if they go over the lesson if they had to. And he got in the habit of, I saw a task, I completed it. I saw a drill, I completed it. And then he went to a match, and even if he didn't close it out in the second set, he was used to completing a task eventually. And so that wasn't a big deal. I really like what you said there about completing those drills. That's great.
You know, a lot of times they're like, I don't know why I'm missing. I don't know why I can't get the drill done. And they look to me for the answer. And you know, I would feel the need to give them the answer and help them. And I just say, especially if I know it's an answer I have given them. If it's something new, okay, because they're not going to know what it is, right? But if it's something I've already told them, I'll actually just sit there and say, figure it out. Make it. They're like, why did I miss that ball long and wide? We'll be like, what would you need to do to bring it in? It's not why the ball went there. It's what you need to do now. You know, and they get stuck on why they did something wrong. Well, get to what you need to do and just get it done. You know, and I sit there and I let them work through it. And if they can't work through it, then how are they going to work through it in a match if they can't do it in practice? They have to problem solve. And I think we need to put kids in more situations where they're forced to problem solve in a match. And the repercussion has to be something that bothers them enough, like doing one drill for an hour and a half or 2 hours. And that is their entire practice. And that stinks, you know, but if that's what you got to work on, that's what you got to work on.
Speaking of problem solving, we were kind of talking to our kids about, you know, basically a match is like a test, right? And so, like you said, why I'm missing ground strokes, what should I do? And we said, what should you do? And I said, answer the question. And they said, well, I could probably hit with more spin. I go, that's a great idea. And they said, I could hit high over the net. I'm like, oh, 2 for 2. I could hit more middle. Excellent. I could hit a little slower. I'm like, hey, it's amazing. And they said, oh, I can move my feet more. I'm like, that's excellent. Now, when are you going to do that? You know, like, you know the answers. Like, most of the time, if you've taken a fair amount of lessons and you've shown up to clinic, if you really take the time in a match and go, what is the problem here? You probably know the answer. So instead of just announcing your problem to the world or even just to yourself, you just solve the problem and you realize it's really not that complicated.
I wonder if you've had this happen to you. I've had this happen so much, and I've gotten to the point where I told the player, I'm sorry that I'm taking it out on you. It's just a buildup of like everybody like saying stuff like this. But, you know, we're working on serves, and the player says, hey, for the past couple of days, I've been doing this on my serve. And I'm like, why are you saying that? Like, why don't you just not do it then? If you know what you're doing and it's wrong, don't do it. Or at least try not to. And then if it still happens, then I'm gonna see it and I'm going to tell you. But you're basically walking into this serve practice right now and not going to change anything and just let me somehow fix everything. But why didn't you just fix it 2 days ago if you know what you're doing wrong? I get this so much, like, hey, I'm not doing this on my serve. Well, if you knew what you weren't doing, then why didn't you just do something else? That part gets me, but I think I try to be patient with it, because for me, it was a little bit different. Like when I was younger, I was small, and I had a one-handed backhand. I couldn't hit over it. So everything was about just strategy and problem solving. I had to figure my way out. I couldn't out-hit anybody. And the juniors that I find the least successful are the ones who just show up to practice with the most amount of problems. But I'm like, and instead of saying that, just be like, hey, I've been working on this because I was doing this wrong. Okay, maybe that's right, maybe it's wrong. And I think that's what I try to tell my players. I'm like, just try something, for crying out loud. Anything that's different, miss differently. And if it's wrong, it's wrong. We'll talk about it. But at least you're in a mindset that you're thinking and you're trying to figure it out. And that's what we need to do. So even though, you know, the Thomas Edison famous line where, you know, I didn't fail 1,000 times, I just learned 1,000 ways to do it wrong. So it's the same thing. You just keep narrowing it down to what the real answer is. At some point, you're going to get it. If you try enough things and you have a coach giving you options, you're going to figure it out.
I'll put a link in the show notes, but you have an online coaching program and you watch a lot of junior tennis matches, which is something a lot of coaches don't get to do, whether because they can't travel or just because kids don't bother to put up the camera. So you have seen a ton of matches played over the last few years. Give me the top thing or two things that you feel like creep up in a lot of these matches that directly lead to losing play. What would the biggest thing be?
Terrible changes of direction. You know, they think that they need to move their opponents because maybe if you can move them, they're smaller, they can't defend well, they're not that strong with the open stances, you can creep in, finish off a volley. But the thing is, if you don't have great ball control, when you change directions, you actually give them the easy cross-court ball to totally run you off the court for the next one. And I see that happen so many times where they change, and first of all, their opponent was actually standing more in the middle of the court. They didn't open up the court well. But they just want to change. They can't hit five balls in a row cross court. They just can't stand the fact that they can't do anything else. And sometimes you don't have a ball to change. The opponent's doing good to be neutral. And you don't have anything to do except just stay cross court or even middle. And you have to wait and wait and wait. And then when you get your opportunity, but if you don't get it, you don't get it. And I think that's the hardest part. I think juniors, I think it's a combination of they learn a lot of things on the court. So they want to do everything. But you can't, you know, you're better at some things than others. Stick to what you're good at once you're in a tournament and then work your way in slowly. I mean, you know, the other thing too, is I think they watch like pro players and they see Djokovic with this unbelievable backhand down the line change, you know, Shapo with this massive forehand and all this stuff, and Medvedev, the way he changes directions. And so they want to play that way because they think, well, if they do it, that's how I need to play. It's like, well, no, that's how they're playing to be the best in the world. You're playing a 13-year-old junior that doesn't really have a backhand. Just hit four in a row over there. You're going to get a ball that's so short, you can then do whatever you want. So as long as you can hit it deep to the backhand, yeah, it's boring. But winning's fun.
I think the only time I got through to one girl once, and as a coach, you know this is going to happen. You don't have these breakthroughs every day. Like, you just know, like, you're chopping wood, and you're like, one day it's going to sink in, and that's like your, you know, Mona Lisa. You go home, you're so excited, but I played, she was a little bit lower than the girl in her practice. So she was probably like a UTR point lower. And she took a water break. And I said, I'll play the stronger girl right now. And I said, I'm not going to hit a ball faster than 30 miles an hour. And I will only hit cross court. And I said, you think I'm going to win? And she said, no. And I asked the other girl I was playing, I said, you think I'm going to beat you? And she said, no. And I, of course, I can't help myself. I go, it'll probably be 10-0, but we'll see. Like, you never know. And we played this breaker and I beat her 10-0. And there were a couple close points. Like, she had some overhead she could have finished. And so I walk off the court and I look at the girl, the younger girl, And I said, can you hit as fast as I just hit? And she said, yes. I said, okay. And can you hit cross court for the most part if you want to? And she said, yes. And I said, okay, well then why can't you beat the stronger player 10-0? What is missing there? And it actually got her thinking like, oh, you know what? It's not that I don't have 15 different ways to finish a shot yet. It's that I don't move well enough and I won't stick in it enough and I don't hit quite deep enough. But it's really not this complicated sport where you have to have 12 weapons and think through all these things. It's like one or two patterns done well for 3 hours. That's it.
I think one of my favorite things to do is look at, you know, when we're scouting opponents against Riley is, you know, where do they take their shots the most of the time? And there's one opponent, I don't want to say his name, took over 90% of his backhands cross court. Cross court or like straight down the middle. Like, so 9% of his shots were down the line. This player is a semifinalist in a Grand Slam and a top 10 player. And everybody knows where his backhand's going. Every second serve, about 90% of it went to one spot. And he just got really good at doing that. And that's it. And he just keeps things calm. He doesn't play out of his comfort zone. He does what he does and he does it well. And everybody knows it. But that's the thing. People just get desperate because he won't miss within what he's doing. And he can hit it deep enough and well enough at a decent enough pace. But he also doesn't blast away winners. So, but they're just so consistent and everybody else tries to do so much, you know, and they just kind of beat themselves against him, you know, except for the other top guys. And so that's the thing in juniors. It's, I'm not telling you guys to push and just that's it and moonball for an hour. No, just if you don't have anything to do, it's okay. Just sit there. Because also juniors, you're not strong enough to just hit that many winners. This is another thing too. I would probably say over 99% of my matches, it's not about who hits the most winners and forced errors. It's about who hits the most unforced errors. So don't try to out-hit your opponent. Find a speed that you can hit at that you're not going to get hurt on, but that you can be extremely consistent and you can move the ball around the court. And then when you get a short ball, you can do something with it. But that's way more important than having this massive forehand. You know, these players that are telling me that, you know, my forehand is my strength. And I said, but you hit 18 winners forced errors with your forehand, but you hit 39 unforced errors. How is that your weapon? Like, if you are hurting yourself more than you're winning points with it, it's not a weapon anymore. It's actually hurting you.
I'll look for any reason to compare something to golf, but there's this great online program I pay for. It's got all these like instructional videos. And it said the difference between a guy who shoots a 79 and 95 is one birdie. And the gap between the players is just the elimination of double bogeys and bogeys. It's not birdies. And that's always kind of what I think of when I think of a 4-0 adult, right? Or whatever it is. And it's like, they're trying to make more birdies. And I'm like, it's not about the birdies. It's not about the winners. It's about just cleaning it up. But we're running a little long. We got to go to Instagram questions. And this one actually is on topic. This person wanted to know what your best drill for improving consistency would be.
This is my favorite one because this is, you start to get to a pretty high level doing the famous, you know, one person hits two balls cross and one down the line and the other person only hits cross court, but you have to get X amount in a row within your pattern. And the person going cross court, if they totally miss the shot then, and you don't make yours and you're the one changing directions, then, you know, it doesn't penalize you because that's not fair. But if they just miss they go down the line when they were supposed to go cross court, you still have to make your ball within your pattern. So now you're talking about consistency, but within the ability to move the ball around the court. So if someone can't complete that drill, then that means they probably shouldn't be changing directions in a match a lot. And I think the better you get, you just increase the number. So if you're like a 4 UTR, you can probably start at 9, you know, 9 in a row. And as you get better, 12, 15, 18, because it's threes, right? Three shots, two chains, two cross, one line. So two cross, one down the line within a certain amount that you have to make in a row is my favorite.
Is there anything that, you know, you have a ton of experience on as a player and as a coach, but this person wanted to know specifically, was there anything that you learned from being on tour for those 3 years with Riley that you previously had no concept of? Was there anything that was brand new that you added to your coaching arsenal?
I will say the one thing I learned how to really deeply just ingrain within yourself is like how these players, it's unbelievable how one loss, they just don't care. You know, it's just, it's really weird. They're upset, of course, but it just doesn't rattle them. You know, they're like, so what if I lost first round at a, you know, ATP 250? Like, I care if I lose in the finals. That one's going to hurt. But for me to lose first round, I don't care. There's not that many points. There's not that many money. They're not worried about that when they start getting later in the draw. So, you know, a lot of times I got so hung up on just getting that first round win and just caring so much, you know, myself as a player about every little thing. And they played so much freer, you know, earlier in rounds because they're like, no, I'm not worried about this. Like, I want to win the whole tournament, you know? So, you know, I was pretty impressed with how they addressed some of that stuff.
I like that. And this is the one everyone stays tuned in for. Your best advice for the 4-0 player?
Care more about working towards the best player you can be than the moment. If you care so much about getting better and knowing what kind of player you want to be at the end of the day, you know, okay, when your tennis career is over, whatever age it might be, you still want to be able to play a certain type of tennis. Your backhand needs to be at a certain level, your forehand needs to be at a certain level, your volleys, all that. And if you're so concerned about getting to that point, you're going to improve your game enough that wins are just going to happen naturally. Because you care more, you're more afraid of not getting to that point than losing today. So if you know that the one thing holding you back is hitting over your backhand because you slice it too much and you're afraid to hit it, and so you don't have enough reps and you don't have confidence when someone just like leaves a ball there. When you're playing a match and you finally get a ball there, you're going to be nervous about hitting it, but you know you have to, because if not, you'll never accomplish what you want.
Love that. So for people who want more of you and your coaching advice, where can they find you?
My website, www.obonetennis.com, A-U-B-O-N-E tennis.com. I'm also on Instagram, same thing, Obone Tennis. Facebook, LinkedIn, gosh, you can kind of find me everywhere. I think we can all be found everywhere nowadays.
Appreciate your time. Learned a lot. Hopefully people out there did as well. And look forward to talking to you in the next couple months.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on. You've had some great guests, so I feel honored to be here.
All right. I want to thank JY for coming on the show today. I, as a coach, love how he tells his players to just figure it out if he's already given them the answer. I am definitely going to add that to my coaching arsenal. But one thing you can pick up from this episode was his quick answer to the biggest mistake he sees in matches, and that was poor changing of directions. Going cross-court with height and depth can be boring, but simple tactics win matches. So focus on being consistent and only changing directions when you're up in the court in offense. If you do this, I think you'll see a spike in your level at the baseline. I want to thank you all for listening. I know there are a lot of podcasts out there, and I'm grateful you chose to join me today. I'm motivated to evolve and improve, so please subscribe if you enjoyed the episode and leave a comment or review so we keep getting better every week. For more, check out my Instagram at StokieTennis for clips from these podcasts, as well as general drills and tips to help your tennis game. Thanks for listening. I hope you just improved at tennis without even hitting a ball.